Those are quite the powerful words. I'm lost without you. It speaks to a need that we come with, each of us this morning, saying, God, you know what? I need your direction. I need your strength in my life. I want to follow you. And I know that as you lead, I'm not lost. And that's an incredible thing. And it's just great to pray with these grade 12 students, too, and just know that they're following God's direction in their life and wanting to serve and to minister. And use their spring break in this way. And we're going to have an exciting opportunity a year from now. As those of you who have kids in school or whatever, you'll know that this is the beginning of spring break. And we're going to invite families or people, whatever phase of life, to come next March, spring break, as a church missions trip together to Colima, Mexico. So if you're inspired by seeing these grade 12 students this morning heading off to Guatemala and Thailand, you're going to get a chance to jump in on a team like that, because I know God's going to do some powerful things in their lives, and he always does. When we come together and serve and live in community together for a week or two, and so you might want to be already kind of blocking that out on your calendar for a year from now. Well, this morning we are continuing on with our series, Famous Last Words, and we're going through, well, at least four anyhow, of the seven last sayings that are recorded of Jesus on the cross. And somebody said this morning, as they looked at our new program, did you notice that? Our new program, pretty fine. It is finished. Quite a conclusive statement on the front there. We're going to explore what those three words mean, because they're very powerful words. It is finished. To finish something, sometimes, how many of you get in on a project and you just go, I just want this project to be done. Maybe this weekend was one of those times. Maybe spring break is going to be one of those times. I think of renovation work sometimes in your house. It's like, am I going to ever get finished? And I was talking to my son. For students always have that sense of there's another thing to finish, you know? What was wonderful about coming out from that era of life was just like, oh, you mean there isn't just another assignment hanging over my head, just waiting to be finished? There's other things in life, obviously, but I was talking to my son this week, and it was his reading week at Bible college, and he was telling me, oh, I got so many things to do. I got so many assignments. I go, so what'd you do today? Well, I worked out, I played basketball, and I went and played hockey all day, and I've been doing that all week long. So, but sometimes there's the, I'm finished, and yes, I'm so excited. There's such a relief. Sometimes it's like a frustrated, I'm so done kind of thing. But here we look at the words of Jesus, and it's good for us to explore, what does that look like? What was going on when Jesus declared those words, it is finished? So we're going to read those in the context. He's on the cross, and John 19, verse 28 to 30 tells us a little bit about that. Key words there to start with. Jesus knew that his mission was now finished. He knew that. And to fill scripture, he said, I am thirsty. And a jar of sour wine was sitting there, so they soaked a sponge in it, put it on a hyssop branch, and held it up to his lips. When Jesus had tasted it, I think there was just enough there, energy, and just his voice, his throat was clear enough for him to just say, it is finished. Then he bowed his head, and he released his spirit. Famous last words. Today I want to discover and talk about what that looks like in our lives. We have a statement at Coast Hills, and you'll notice in the inside of your program at the very top, that's a great format, isn't it? It's just nice to be able to open it up like that. And at the very top, it says, helping people discover and follow Jesus. And what's really neat is that God discovers and starts something in our hearts. We discover it. God's doing it. And then we end up going on this journey of following Jesus. And this morning, I want to talk a little bit about that following Jesus part of that vision statement. For those here, you might be still in that phase of, there might be some here who are saying, you know what, I'm still kind of discovering what that looks like. That's great. That's the place where you're at in your spiritual journey. For others, you go, I know God's done something in my heart, and he started something. Now, how do I continue on and see it through to the finish? There's something incredibly gratifying of the finish line kind of thing. And we know ultimately what finish means for any of our lives is, you know, our lives come to a point and it's over. And there's that. But there is something else about saying, you know what, I'm going to just keep going on this journey, and I'm going to finish what God starts in us. So today I want to talk about how to finish what God starts in you. How to finish what God starts in you. How to do that following Jesus. So the first point that I want to make this morning is that the most profound thing that we can do in this road of being a disciple, which means following Jesus, is to live in thankfulness for the finished work of Jesus. That statement is so powerful. There was something done on the cross there that was so powerful for us that if we really stop and think about it, it will fill our hearts with thankfulness till the end of our days. See, what happened there is Jesus said, "It is finished." Tetelestai is the Greek word. And what it means, there was a whole bunch of meanings to this, but one of it is that here we have the Old Testament prophecies were now fulfilled, and the once-for-all sacrifice for sin had been completed. Tetelestai, the Greek word, was a word that was used in everyday times, oftentimes by servants. When they report to their master, they'd say, "I have completed the work I've signed for me." In a very powerful way, Jesus was saying, "I have completed the work that was assigned for me. I knew that when I came, this was the mission that I was going to accomplish." When a priest would examine an animal sacrifice and find that it was faultless, that was the old covenant, the old system, this word would also apply, tetelestai. And Jesus, as we know, was that perfect Lamb of God without spot or blemish. So it was finished. Jesus knew that he had lived a perfect, sinless life right to the end. When an artist completed a picture, he'd go, "The picture's complete. It's done." I believe part of what Jesus was saying up there is this picture of God and his love and his self-sacrifice, it's finished. I've shown the world. I've demonstrated. I have painted a picture. I have come in person. I've incarnated who God is. When somebody finishes a manuscript, they would say, "Tetelestai, it is finished." And we understand that what had done here was all the writings of the Old Testament had been completed. So many prophecies had come to an end. But one of the most powerful things, too, was in transactions between merchants, or when you would, it was like a receipt would be written, and you'd have this debt-owing kind of a receipt. And what they would write across it was tetelestai. They would write, "Paid in full," is what it would mean as well. What Jesus did on the cross not only covered our sin, but actually took it away. Our mountain of moral debt is taken care of. Jesus took care of it. It's done. There's something incredibly powerful about knowing that it's done for us. What God has done for us is completely forgiven us. Jesus finished a work assignment that we couldn't even have gotten started on. He lived a perfect, sinless life. He ministered with complete unselfishness. He fulfilled every prophecy in the Old Testament. He lived in perfect relationship with his Father. He did everything the Father did, and then he set his face on a mission to die and suffer for us, to come back to life again. His mission was completely finished, and now he was trusting his Father to bring him back to life again. As I said last week, one of the things that happened while he was on the cross was this curtain that separated people from the presence of God in the most holy place in the temple. It was torn from top to bottom. And what it meant then, too, is that it is finished. This separation between God's holiness and us, now his holiness actually comes and resides in us. It's like the perfection of God comes and is actually present there in us. We can enjoy that. There's something incredibly great about that. When you have a starting point in your spiritual journey where you realize that I'm not trying to do something, the pressure's off of me. I'm not trying to, in a sense, get something from God through whatever it might be, religious hoops, showing up at church, doing these prayers, whatever it might be, it's already been done. Jesus wants us to know that, and he wants us to live kind of in a place of, we've already accomplished the mission. It's already been accomplished for us. It's such a powerful thing when we get that. I was thinking about an analogy for this, and I was thinking about, I know I use sports analogies all the time, but I can't get away from it. The Canadian hockey team, and how we always, every 4 years, and then every year in the juniors, we set our Canadian national teams out on a mission. And all of those hockey players know that for Canadians, there's only one way that their mission can be accomplished, and that is not just to show up, but to get a gold medal. Come home with anything less than a gold, and sorry, you just didn't accomplish it. Now, for that reason, I think that sort of pressure is why sometimes we underperform. You do. When you live life under a weight, under a pressure, I think of the hockey players. You're just gripping the stick a little harder. You're not. Well, thankfully, at this last one, they pulled through. And I think of when Sidney Crosby scored that overtime goal, you know, threw his gloves up in the air. By the way, one of those gloves went over the glass, landed right in the hands of Matt Rihor in our church here. He had to return it back to him, obviously. That's like a golden glove. But there was obviously a whole lot of excitement and everything, but don't you think there was just a ton of relief? Like, we did it kind of thing. What I loved about during that game, they zoomed in on Drew Doughty, who's like poetry on ice. He's just so smooth and so, you know. And they showed, you know, in between the puck being dropped, they're rocking the tunes in the Rogers Arena there. And he was just sitting there on the bench going like this. And the announcers were just amazed, like, here, that's the weight of the country on his shoulders. But he's just having a great time. And they interviewed him afterwards. He says, I'm just glad to be here. You know, there's something very different when you're just glad to be there. When it's like, I'm just glad to be here. And, you know, I hope that as we sit in church together, there's that sense of, I'm just glad to be here. It's already been done for me. The mission's accomplished. I am done with perfection anxiety. I don't have to be perfect because Jesus was already. I'm going to mess up. I've messed up. God forgives me. I'm done with trying to do enough because I can't possibly do enough. The standard was so high, but Jesus lived it perfectly. He did it for me. I get to just show up. I'm done with meaninglessness. I'm done with a sense of, well, you know, I don't know, like that song said, I'm lost without you. I'm done with not knowing what my direction is. I love Rick Warren's book in Purpose-Driven Life where he just says, you've got a purpose. There's something to your life. There is a mission. We know what it is. It's to just live out the life of Jesus, just to follow him and listen to his promptings in our life and just go with it. I'm done. I'm done with all of that. That's what we get to say because Jesus said it is finished. We get to say the same thing. When we're going through our life and we're living with the stress of, oh, I got to get this done, I got to get this done. Well, there's this part of living life, but in some sense we can go, you know what? I can just stop and relax. The life has been done for me already. There's something very powerful about living in that zone. And we just thank God. We just stop and we just say, thank you, Jesus. You've already done it for me. You've taken care of the perfect expectations that I sometimes place on myself. You've taken care of all these things, the guilt, any shame in my life, whatever past failings have happened, God, you've taken care of it. It's wonderful. That's why I think Paul says in Colossians 3, verse 15 to 17, he says, let the message about Christ in all its richness fill your lives. In all your richness. This is what he wants us to do. He wants us to go back again. I don't know if you've ever had somebody do something for you and you have to kind of revisit that again, some generous act, and you just go, oh, wow, that made such a difference. And what we get a chance to do when we come together, and this is why he says, teach and counsel each other with wisdom he gives, sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. That's what we did this morning, with thankful hearts. We're just reminding ourselves again, okay, the pressure's off. It's finished. It's done for me. We live in thankfulness when we go there. I came across a line this last week at a seminar that was thrown up, that was quoted for us. It says, worldview hangs on the thin thread of conversation. Worldview hangs on the thin thread of conversation. You know what we do when we come together in church and in life group and with other believers at a coffee shop or whatever is, we have a conversation and we're reminded, we speak grace into each other's lives. And we say, you know what, it's all grace, it's all free because of what Jesus did for us. And we're encouraged and we're buoyed up. And we go, okay, I can take on what you have in my life, God. It's an incredible thing to live in thankfulness. And it's incredibly important for us to remember that again and again. I can just live in thankfulness. Second point I think that we can see in this is along the way, God says, you know what, I want you to decide again and again to pay the cost of finishing. There's going to be a cost. Jesus was really clear when he spoke to people. He said, you know what, evaluate and say, he says, I want to guarantee you it's worth the cost, but do kind of figure through the cost. Have you ever been in a renovation project or something where you go, oh man, can I possibly, you're getting towards the end and you go, I'm running out here, but I got to see this through. We got to finish this thing. Jesus, he used that analogy in Luke 14. He says, so there's huge crowds coming around Jesus. He's like a rock star and people were seeing him do so many things. He says, but don't begin until you count the cost. This is what he says. For who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and everyone would laugh at you. They would say, there's the person who started the building and couldn't afford to finish it. What Jesus is saying is, you know, don't make it just an easy follow me in the good times kind of thing. There are going to be some tough times. Now, we all know in life that's inevitable. One way or another, with or without Jesus, we're going to go through some tough times. And he says, you know, sometimes there's going to be a cost that you wouldn't have experienced otherwise. If it's just about living for status with others, well, there might be some loss of social standing when you follow Jesus because you're buying into a different worldview than many people will. And they might look at you and go, you know what, that just looks strange. That looks weird because they don't understand it. But Jesus says, you know what, there may be that cost. There might be a cost sometimes in another level where a worldview is, you know, morality-wise, just go down this road. It doesn't matter, really. And you're going, oh, man, so much of me wants to go down that road. And you go, no, I'm not going to do that. There's a cost. Jesus says, whoever gives up will receive back 100-fold. He says, you will receive back 100-fold. Sometimes it's going to, in the cost of following Jesus, there's going to be some time and some energy. You're going to have to say, you know what, I'm going to go and do this. As an act of obedience and an act of will, I'm going to go and do that. That's counting the cost. There may be a set of values that guides you in your workplace where you go, you know what, it might cost me higher salary, it might cost me moving up the ladder, but whatever it is, integrity matters. There's a value here that I'm going to stick by. Jesus says, you will get back 100 times. And you know, in those moments, it's good to know that Jesus feels that with us. He felt that in the garden before Jesus went to the cross and said these words. This is what he says at the bottom of the screen there. It says, Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. So here was Jesus on the cross, knowing the agony, the cost it was going to have on him going to the cross. And he's with Jesus and much like we might find in prayer, we're going, oh God, really? You're asking me to do this? That's going to be a lonely road, or that's, you know, others might not understand. That might cost me in the way of relationship or in finances, but Jesus has been there. He's experienced it, and he's with us in that. And where he comes to at the end of the day is, I'm going to surrender my will to yours. Not yours, not my will, but yours be done. I love that. There's a book that I came across a number of years ago, and I thought, oh man, I got to buy that for my son. It was called Do the Hard Things. It was written by two teenagers, Alex and Brett Harris. And what they wrote, basically their whole thesis of the book is they're rebelling against the low expectations of culture. They're saying, you know what, we're gonna move that. We're going to put the bar up. And there's going to be a cost to that. Another along the same line, I think that it means when we look at it as finished, is there's that aspect of taking care of unfinished business in our lives. Of saying, you know what, I'm going to live the law of love. Ultimately, Jesus said, he was always put on the spot. People are always trying to trip him up. They said, so what's the greatest law? And Jesus says, it's love. Love others. Live completely full of love. Now, who of us does that completely? None of us does. But there might be along the way, there might be something that happens in our lives and we go, you know what, I haven't really live that and work that out. And I need to go back and take care of some things. Take care of unfinished business. It says in Romans 13:8, it says, "Owe nothing to anyone except for your obligation to love one another. If you love your neighbor, you will fulfill the requirements of God's law." Now, there may be a cost to love. And maybe we recognize that we stumble and fall. The wonderful thing is there is complete forgiveness for that. That's what Jesus said. It is finished. I love you so much that I have taken care of that. But there might be something that says in our hearts, I need to go back to that person. It might be on a relational level. We just go, you know what? I'm going to go there. I'm not going to leave that person hanging. Is there something that we need to go? Is there some way in which a commitment to the end needs to be performed? God will be there for us. He will help us. Part of his "it is finished" is him saying, now my life is in yours. I will be there for you for those commitments to follow through on them. Paul talked to the people in Corinth about something they needed to finish starting. It was something that came out of their hearts, is that they were going to help others by giving of their finances. And this is what he says, now you should finish what you started. He says, let the eagerness you showed in the beginning be matched now by your giving, given in proportion to what you have. There may be some kind of commitment. It might be financial, as it was in this point, but you know that God worked in your heart and you said, God, I'm committing to that. And maybe something has kept you off course on there, and there might be unfinished business. Go back to that again. Because Jesus finished the task and his life is in us, we can finish it too. The empowerment is there. It's for us. The fourth "it is finished" I want to talk about finishing what God started in us, is to focus on finishing your race. Your race. Again and again in the Bible, there's this analogy made in the Bible to a race. Apostle Paul makes it often. Jesus used it too. It's a great picture. The idea of our life is like a race. And, you know, for any of us, we know we enter whatever it is, the sun run or whatever. You say, you know, I want to finish. And in our lives too, I think there's such a gratifying feeling. You think about it when you cross the finish line, you go, oh, it's finished. It's great. The thing about the race in our lives is that it's not like a 10,000 meters around the same track kind of course. The course is really quite different for each one of us. And sometimes in our lives, we kind of have that expectation. We know it should be exactly the same for the next person as us. And we start comparing another person's race to ours. I think the race that they're talking about in the Bible is much more like The Amazing Race. I love that show. It's one of my favorite ones. But in that race, nobody actually gets exactly the same course. Along the way, you get these things, detours, roadblocks. For those of you who've seen it, fast forwards, yields, U-turns, intersections. There's all sorts of things that come up, and it's different for different teams and different people. And there's a lot of unexpected kind of things along the way. I think that's oftentimes what we find. We start this journey with Jesus, and we find along the way, okay, boy, my hurdle or my obstacle is different than that next person, whatever it is. And Jesus says, focus on your race. You know, Jesus, in his resurrected body, he met with all the disciples, and it's just amazing words of reassurance and hope and strength that he gave to them. It is finished. He took care of everything. He came back to life, and he went and visited each of these, and he wants to do the same with us. One of the people that he met with was Peter, who had denied him so horribly and just felt like, I've got to be eliminated from the race. Jesus says, you're never eliminated. You're never disqualified. He reinstates Peter. He also tells Peter, there's going to be a tough deal ahead, and he actually tells him, I don't know what that'd be like for us, but there was going to be a high cost. And Peter was actually going to die for his faith. And in this passage in John 21, it says, Peter turned around and he saw behind him the disciple Jesus loved. I love those words, because that's the guy who's writing this is the Apostle John. And he always referred to himself as, I'm the guy Jesus loved. I just want you to know that I'm the guy that Jesus loved. And Peter asked Jesus, what about him, Lord? He's going, what about John? What about his race? And Jesus replied, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? As for you, follow me. I think that's really important in our journey, is to recognize that whatever it is that I'm presented in, it might be a relationship, it might be just my life kind of place, it might be a place of health, What is so empowering is when we say, okay, God, this is uniquely the race you've given me. I'm not going to live in comparison to that person over there. And so oftentimes we might look at another person and think, oh man, their race seems so easy. We might not know the hidden battles that they experience or the real story of what might be going on. And what Jesus says is, make it your race with me. Keep it there. Keep in that zone. It might look so good over there, but this is the race that I've got for you. And there is a unique reward, a unique thing that I'm doing in your life, even in the midst of your specific race. Something I am working out in your life. It really ties in with this last point. I'll finish with this. Is that God is finishing a work in us. Nothing that happens, really believe, in each of our courses and the race that we're called to happens by random. There's a God who is working. And whatever the obstacle, U-turn, detour, whatever it might feel like that's happening in our lives, this is what Jesus says. He says, I'm going to finish the work in you. He says, Philippians 1 verse 6, he says, I am certain that he who began the good work within you will continue his work until it is finally finished on the day when Christ Jesus returns. Whatever it is that we're facing, whatever it is that is going on in our lives, and we just want, oh God, can it just be finished? And it might seem like it's going on. God says, you know what? I'm actually doing a work inside of you during that. I'm continuing to work in you. And really, you know, on one level, it's very simple for us. It's just letting him do that work. Just letting him, whatever it is that he is wanting to do in your life, and sometimes you can't even picture it or see it. He's finishing something inside of you. I think of one project that I went on with a basement, kind of finishing a basement, and I got to the point and I thought I was going to do all the finish work on it and everything, and finally I knew I couldn't, and I stepped away and I just got another guy down there, and I wasn't even around, but he finished it all off, and it was like, you come back, you go, oh, I can't believe it, it's done. You know, in the same way, in the hidden recesses of our lives and our hearts and minds, God's doing a work. He's finishing something in our lives. There's unique circumstances, unique things that are going on, but if we just release and let him do the work, he will do the work. That's the guarantee here. He says, I am certain. There's like no doubt about it. God is doing something in my life, in my present circumstance. And he's finishing something that he started. And we might not even know what that thing is. How is he finishing this? But he is doing that. There's something incredibly inspiring about knowing that even in the moment of coming together and worshiping, and even as we're sitting here this morning, if I just say, God, I surrender. I let you take the wheel. I let you control. That there is a God who is active. He's alive. He didn't stay dead on the cross. He's alive and he's working in our lives and he's working something out. And he's doing the work of making us into the kind of people that are like Jesus. Uniquely like Jesus. And you know what's so cool is it's not a cookie cutter kind of person. It's whatever the unique course that he has for us is uniquely to make us more like ourselves. Kind of the better version of ourselves that he intended. He's working that out in our lives, and he's making, putting in patience where we might not have patience, putting in endurance where we might need endurance. He might be putting in courage where we really need courage in our lives. But all of those things aren't random. He's actually finishing a work inside of us. He's bringing about his person. See, what stepping into this life of following Jesus is really saying, I believe and I expect that, God, you're going to make me more like Jesus. And it's that kind of in Christ kind of perfection we never achieve in this life, but God's working that out in us. And he says, if you want that to happen, just surrender. Just let go. Maybe that's the thing this morning, is just saying again, I'm just going to let go. Maybe God would say, you know, I want you to again remind yourself, don't live in comparison to that next person's race. Run mine. You might be saying, you know what, this morning, in order for you to do your work in my life, God, I'm not going to leave some unfinished business that I know you're calling me to. I'm going to go and take care of that. Or I'm just going to, again and again, be reminded that though there's a cost here, and I'm willing to pay that cost, that there is a reward. God, I get to live with the thankfulness, the freedom of knowing that I'm free, I'm forgiven. It's taken care of. I'm not trying to do this thing. It's already been done for me. It's finished. I'll pray. God, I just want to thank you that you finished a work that is so unbelievable, that you would come and you take the mountain of moral debt that we pay, that we have, and you put it on yourself. You took care of all of that. You finished painting the picture of who you are, God, a God who would love and serve and even suffer to pay the cost so that we can be set free. I thank you for the freedom that comes into our lives, for the fact that we can just live in grace, that we can live in strength, really, because you are alive and you are alive in our lives. So God, may we just live that out this week in complete freedom, knowing that you are doing work in you. And may we just again and again, whatever the circumstance, just surrender again and let you do your work, finishing what you started inside of us. I thank you that you guarantee that you will do that. We are certain of this. In your name, amen.
Please stand.